You are listening to the Punk News Podcast for the week of May 20, 2014. We got a packed house tonight, so get ready for a wild party, house party style. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we got the moldy oldies on the podcast tonight. We got number two, number three, and number four, and I think I'm a number seven or number eight, but by the time I've been around, everyone else has quit, so by default, I'm like number five now. Number two with us, Mr. Number Two himself, Adam White. How you doing?
I'm really tired.
Baby
That's
troubles got
not exciting. Oh, God, baby work. Sunspots, chemtrails, everything. Just
what?
I don't know.
He's tired, folks.
I'm tired.
We'll go easy on him tonight. With us here is number three, who hasn't been on the podcast in a hot minute, but we're so happy to have him back. We've got video editor Chris Moran. Chris Moran, how you be?
I'm doing good. I just want to know how Adam feels about being called number two.
Thing one and thing two.
No. Get it.
Number two. Oh, okay. Jeez. How old are you, Chris? Come on.
I didn't go there. So, yeah, I wasn't even thinking that. So.
This is going to be the best podcast all year. I'm so excited. And with us here is number four. Number four, Greg Simpson, reviews writer and soon to be podcast editor. Greg, are you ready to assume the mantle?
I am. And also, don't forget, Two Greg's One Podcast co-host. We just had a new episode a couple weeks ago, and we got a new one cooking. I know you guys just posted the text review Zero Boys. We're also doing Zero Boys, so kind of a alternative view on that. And what else are we doing?
Thanks
I can't
plugs,
remember.
Greg. Anyways,
hey, Adam,
we should also
them.
Point out on the Punk News Podcast that one of our favorite people, Sound Guy Nairman, is retiring from the position. You know, he's made hundreds of thousands of dollars doing this by now, so I think he's just deciding to move on to something else. So we all have to thank Sound Guy Nairman, because episode 200 will be his final appearance on the podcast. And get ready, we got something really special for episode 200. But this is episode 197.
Hey,
believe.
John.
Yeah.
Is Nairman actually going to talk on 200?
I think he might. We should get him to see if he will. Of course, we've alternatively claimed that Nairman's a robot, that he doesn't exist, that he's a ghost. So will the true Nairman reveal himself on episode 200? Stick around and find out. It's like an episode of Ghost Rider. You guys remember Ghost Rider? The ghost that helped kids solve mysteries through the power of reading?
All I gotta say is, for anybody who's curious, Nairman sounds exactly like that sexual chocolate dude.
I was saying we should put him through some sort of voice modulator or something. Make him sound like Isaac Hayes or something.
Hello, ladies.
Yeah.
This is the best podcast ever. Also, make sure you stick around to the end of this podcast. We've got something pretty special, too, is I interviewed the lead singer of Arno Corps. His name is Holtz Foyer, and basically they're a band that have come to America to sing the tales of the Alpine in Austria. People think they're influenced by Arnold Schwarzenegger, but it turns out it's the other way around. We were going to do this as a written interview, and we still will do this as a written interview, but I'm telling you people, stick around for my interview with Holtz Foyer after the regular podcast. If you hear one podcast, one interview all year, you've got to hear this one, because it is one of the funniest interviews I've ever done. And with that, let's reach into our mailbag. We've been putting off mail a lot lately because we've been so busy, but we got a little bit of a breather here. So let's read the first of two emails that I will read today. The first one is from Jared. Jared is responding to about 2 weeks ago where me, Ricky, and was it Greg? Or was it Mark?
Mark Little, probably.
Yeah, it was me, Ricky, and Mark were dissing on emo pretty bad, and I said, somebody defend emo. And so here's what Jared had to say. Hey, John, no offense, but you guys were pretty dismissive about the emo genre on the last podcast. However, the way you feel about emo is the way I feel about heavy metal! Emo is not about wrist slashing and crying into black fingernail painted hands. Those are just lame stereotypes and similar to the stereotypes that get thrown at punk rock, which are usually boiled down to a dress code and one style of music or point of view. I think we all can agree that the punk scene gets a lot deeper than that, as does emo, the little brother of punk. If you want a good idea about why emo is important, then I suggest reading Andy Greenwald's Nothing Feels Good, Punk Rock, Teenagers, and Emo, which covers the similarities between the genres as well as its incarnation from punk and hardcore and its exploitation in the early 2000s. Punk News Can't Hate on Emo. You guys just had John from the Dads on We'll Do It Live, and they are the emo beluga whale. So I think Jack put up a good defense. I think I probably was overly brutal on emo. So I'll have to go back and I'll have to reassess emo itself. I'll have to look at the emo founders and see what appeals to me.
As long as they stop calling Hot Water Music emo, I don't really care.
Jared, I appreciate the letter. I am an emo fan as well, and I hated that that word became like a dirty word. Yeah, when a bunch of those stupid, you know, all black hair, all black clothes, all, you know, black nails, bull crap in the early 2000s. But yeah, for late 90s, I mean, actually, for all the 90s, there was pretty some really good stuff. And especially growing up in Chicago, I had all of the Cap'n Jazz family tree coming out. And in a couple days, I should have my American Football Deluxe Edition review up as well, which is pretty kick-ass teaser.
Thanks for the plug, Greg. Also, we got an email from Mark. This goes back to Adam. Do you remember when you and I were saying maybe we don't cover like brutal or nasty or hardcore enough?
Yeah, well, because we're scared.
Yeah, we're too tough for emo, but we're not tough enough for hardcore, you know? We're true punk rockers. Anyway, this is Mark. Mark wrote a pretty thoughtful letter. He said, on the April 2nd episode, John G. asked listeners to send in some examples of good hardcore bands. My entries lead more on the punk side, but still fit in the conversation you were having. My first entry is Reach for the Sky. They're really great, high-energy punk hardcore from Boston that existed in the late 90s. They were lumped
good
in
band, good
oh,
band.
Oh, they're a good band?
I like them. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. That was they were one of those, like, pace punk bands, you know? Adam, you know what I'm talking about.
It sounds really familiar. I can picture Jordan Baker rocking out, so.
Yep.
So we'll have to check them out. So even Chris Moran gives Reach for the Sky a thumbs up. Also, this is Mark's second recommendation. It's a band called, oh, and actually, he's recommending this directly to you, Adam White. The band is called One Blood. He says they were a short-lived but long-forgotten punk hardcore band from Toronto who were the first to do the punk hardcore blend as we know it today, i.e. Good Riddance. We're talking like 1998 here, complete with a multiracial lineup and socially conscious lyrics. This band was so important, yet there's almost no recount of their existence. Bands like Anti-Flag and Propagandhi are practically modeled after One Blood.
Wait, 1998? I mean, Good Riddance and Propagandhi were before that. 1988, okay.
Yeah. So he says, love the podcast, thanks, and that's from Mark. So Mark, thanks for the email. And so we got to do our emo research, we got to do our hardcore research, but Punk News listeners, thanks for giving us recommendations, because we're always looking for hot jams, be they new or be they old. If you can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. That's podcast@punknews.org. And let's get this party started. First news item, Tim Lambesis, who was arrested and pled guilty to hiring a hitman to kill his wife, has been sentenced. The sentence is 6 years in jail, which really seems a little light to me, if you ask me. What happened was, some of the facts came out. It's basically he asked his trainer if he knew someone that could kill his wife, and the trainer said no. But then the trainer went to the cops, and the cops helped the trainer set up a decoy undercover police officer that accepted $1,000, photos, and the access code to Lambesis' house, so the undercover cop could hypothetically kill Lambesis' wife. And so now he's pled guilty, and he's been sentenced to 6 years in jail. During the hearing sentencing, Lambesis' attorney said he was high on steroids, basically, so he wasn't making good decisions, and that affected his decisions. Meanwhile, the DA was shooting for 9 years. They got 6 years, and the judge pointed out that there's lots of people that do steroids that don't try to kill their wife. Do you guys think this is a light sentence? Do you guys think we'll see As They Lay Dying again? Do you guys think the other band members who have started a band called Woven War will survive this incident?
It's definitely getting them exposure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a light sentence for sure. I mean, that's some pretty serious shit right there. I mean, it calculated, like, in that somebody linked to it in the comments on Blabbermouth. Did you guys read that? The guitarist Nick Hippa, I guess, talks about, you know, his side, like what they thought about his whole excuses and all that. And he brings up a lot of good points about how, I mean, really, he planned this thing out. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, roid rage and you know, if, you know, heat of the moment,
it's Roid meticulous planning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that defense is bullshit.
I'm kind of curious as to how much time he'll actually do. I was sitting here looking, trying to find out if any of that 6 years was suspended, if, you know, he's going to be doing like three with 3 years suspended, but it looks like it's the full six. I think
he already served a year though? Are they counting like time served as he's already been in jail for like a year?
I don't know. That'd be interesting to see. But his career is done. I mean, no one's going to want to fucking touch him after this. He might be able to get like some sort of like reality TV show when he gets out. But other than
he'll
that,
be signed Epitaph.
It'll be like the Charlie Sheen of punk rock, where like everybody hates him, but they want to put his stuff out there just to see what the reaction is or something. People will listen to it just out of curiosity.
I can see a collaboration with Vanilla Ice in his future for some reason.
No, seriously. What's that tool bag we were talking about last week?
Ronnie Radke.
Yeah. You can just go.
Isn't that hilarious how Adam said that tool bag and I automatically knew it was Ronnie Radke?
I've got to say, I don't really care about this guy, but his ex-bandmate's new band name, I think, is incredibly cool.
Woven
because Wars. They could have a whole sweater thing going. You imagine like they get up on stage like we're Woven War and they're all wearing like really nicely knit like arm length like sweaters and everything.
Yes,
it could happen. The merch practically puts itself together,
and their promo photos could be like the old Sears photo, like posed photo where they're all wearing sweaters against a fake like wooded backdrop.
Oh, you could do like a Skull and Crossbones thing with like a ball of yarn and two knitting needles.
I don't think he was actually charged with attempted murder. I think he was charged with conspiracy to commit murder or something like that. That's why it seems a little light. 6 years is a little light on this. But I would say that is 6 years going to make a difference between, say, 18 years? Like, is he going to be more likely to commit murder because he only did 6 than 18? I'm going to say no. I'm going to assume this guy learned his lesson and, honestly, I'm more curious as to – I wonder how he's going to get treated in jail, you know?
Right.
He's a handsome guy. He's got big muscles. But I don't think he's really a tough guy. And they got some real tough guys in murder jail. I don't think he's going to tax jail. I think he's going to murder jail. You know, and they got some bad dudes there. You might have murder big muscles. Jail. I mean,
it's like what do they say in Office Space? This is rape you up the ass prison.
So I don't know. We'll see what happens. They might sequester him because he might be able to convince them that he's a celebrity, and really he is. But I mean, with that long hair, and I think he's going to be in a rough. Honestly, he should be in it for a rough ride. You know what I mean? He did something really, really bad, so I hope he learns his lesson. And honestly, I'm glad the cops caught him before it actually went down, because the cops didn't catch him. I'm thinking it probably would have went down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he thought a lot about it. He put a lot of time and effort into it. I mean, it sounds like it probably would have worked.
I mean, that's really sinister. It's not like he like ran into his house with a gun and like tried to shoot his wife in like 15 minutes. Like, he planned this out. You know, he had like he sat down and said, "If I do A, B, C, and D, I'm good." You know?
Yeah.
What do you guys think of the steroids defense? I'm not buying it. I don't think steroids can make you diabolical, you know?
No. I mean, there have been a lot of professional athletes that have used steroids. And I mean,
it's becoming too easy of a scapegoat. I think we need more I think on the stand we need more more experts and more professionals saying what actually steroids can make people do, you know?
Mm-hmm. We need some scientists in on that. I'm just glancing through this thing that Nick Hippo was saying. I mean, basically, it says that he was one of, let's see, as LA Dying guitarist Nick Hippo, who is identified by Lembesis in Alt Press, is one of the two people from the group that contacted him following his arrest. So, I mean, he says, like, you know, even though obviously who I thought was my friend did this horrible thing, like, he actually showed up to the courtroom, He says, last Friday I sat in a courtroom to support a friend. For the better part of a decade, our professional and personal lives were woven in a relationship akin to family. As if family, the intention of my attendance was to publicly acknowledge the deep care and compassion I hold for this individual. And then, so then Lambesis goes on to basically just blame everybody but himself or whatever, even the steroids and whatnot. Yeah.
So,
and
if, so if you were high on coke, could you use that as a defense? I mean, what the fuck?
Here's how it works. A lot of kids might have this question. In criminal, like murder and attempted murder, and most crimes, there's an intent element. That is, you intended to kill somebody.
Right. It's like first degree versus like manslaughter.
Precisely. Exactly. So let's say you get really drunk and you don't know you're punching someone, and you punch someone and you kill them. That's probably not first or second degree murder. That's probably manslaughter because you didn't know what you were doing. So it is a defense the way we have the law built and the way it functions. It comes down to intent.
Also, he involved her children. His children as well? They say her children. The scheme involved using her children to secure gate codes for a would-be assassin and his plans for their further exploitation as an alibi. And so, yeah, so this is indicative.
That's a lot of planning.
Careful premeditation and not momentary mindlessness.
Well, you heard it here first, kids. Don't commit murder. Did somebody else have something else to say?
I was just going to question, like, whether, like is $20,000 – that seems kind of cheap for killing someone, like.
Oh, was that a fine? He got fined $20,000.
That's how much he agreed to pay the not
$1,000 deposit.
Honestly, Adam, I think it might be a little high. Like, I mean, there's dudes that'll kill somebody for $500.
What are you gonna do with $20,000? Really, that you didn't have before? Like, I'm gonna go buy like a pretty good condition used car or something. Like,
That's why I'm glad you're in computers and you're in social media networking and programming, because Adam, you're not part of that lifestyle. Those guys that will kill somebody for $500, that'll kill somebody for $100.
Yeah, man, John's from the streets.
I am from the streets, son.
You get what you pay for, and that's why he got caught.
I mean, honestly, like $20,000 to kill somebody is probably kind of high. I mean, it's not like I'm hiring assassins or anything, but I mean. down the produce distribution center, there's bad dudes. You know, I mean,
that's upper middle class hitman. That's not like $1 million rock star hitman. He lowballed.
All right, well, you heard it here, folks, kids. $20,000 is a good deal to get somebody murdered if that's what you're going to do.
You pay for.
Nightbirds have released a new song from their upcoming EP. It's an instrumental EP. The EP is called Monster Surf, and the track is cool. It's a Mel Brooks cover, and the track is called Hope for the Best, Expect the Worst. Did you guys check this out? Are you guys excited for a future Nightbirds material? Because there's been rumors going around that they're working on new songs.
Yeah, this is great. This is awesome. Yeah,
someone else go first. Go ahead.
Yeah, Nightbirds are really cool. This EP is very cool. It's entirely instrumental, so it's you know, if you've been in tune with some of the stuff they've been putting out, including the theme song of this podcast, by the way, they do some really rad, you know, surfy guitar stuff. So this is one of those outings. So no yelling or anything on this one, but hey, it's good shit. You should listen to it.
Yeah, honestly, I'm usually not a huge fan of instrumental stuff. I mean, you really got to do a lot to keep my attention if there's no vocals, I suppose. But I really liked it, and then I went and checked out the Mel Brooks one. I mean, I've seen a lot of Mel Brooks stuff, but I've never actually seen that movie. It was from, what's it called? 12 Chairs? Something like that.
Star Wars.
No, you mean Spaceballs? But yeah, I liked it. The surfy vibe was pretty cool, so I'd have to check out more to see if I'd actually like their vocal stylings, but I did dig this track quite a bit.
I assume you'd like their last record only because, like, most decent people should like their last record.
I'm joking.
So yeah, that's
it. Is it melodic in some sort of way? Is there melody?
It rocks, man. The last Nightbirds album was killer. It really was a great album.
But is it just yelling, or is there some sort of sense of melody in there?
People have said it's Dead Kennedys-ish, which I suppose is okay. True. But, I mean, it's not exactly like a Dead Kennedys album. You know?
Well, I could get behind that then.
All right. Adam, you have a hot tune for us to pair up with the Nightbirds?
Yeah, this plays really well off of what Greg was just saying. So when I first heard Nightbirds, I was really excited because their instrumental stuff, like this stuff that's on this EP that they're releasing right now, reminds me a lot of a band out of Calgary in Alberta, Canada, that they're broken up now, but they were the first live band that I'd ever seen. And they were just like crazy, fun, instrumental surf rock stuff. And this is one of their tracks because it plays perfectly into what we're just talking about. So, Greg, you would like this because it's awesome. So that's as far as I need to explain it, I guess. So anyway, yeah. So this band, was called Huevos Rancheros. I knew about the band way more before I knew about The Breakfast. So this is Huevos Rancheros. This, record came out in 1996 on Mint Records out of, Vancouver, BC. The band's out of Calgary. This song is called What a Way to Run a Railroad.
Punk News Podcast. I was digging that track, man. It was a fast, furious, funky instrumental. I felt like I was on the beach myself.
The magic of editing.
And speaking of another band that's rollicking, a band that really goes, pounds it out, goes to the wall, Tiger's Jaw. They've released a new music video for their song Hum. It's off their upcoming album called Charmer, due out June 3rd. You can check out out on Run for Cover Records. You can check it out at Punk News. The kids are really, really into this band. And when I say the kids, I mean the kids. I actually saw this band acoustic once, open for another band, and the people were loving this. Are you guys into this, or what are you guys feeling for Tiger's Jaw?
Chris, you go.
I got to be careful because a lot of my friends like them. no, they're okay. It's nothing that I listen to on a regular basis. I get why people like them. I think they're a talented band. The video is really cool. I really like the effects they use with, like, I assume it's like fishing string or something where they have like the instruments bobbing up and down from them. Kind of a cool little thing, and it kind of goes along with the music. But yeah, I get why the kids like them, and the video is cool. So no harsh words from me.
I had never heard this band before either. I mean, like, when I saw the outline that John posted this afternoon, I'm like, I don't know any of these people except Joey popular. Cape. I mean, I liked it a lot. I mean, really? I'm a big sucker for male-female vocal trade-offs and stuff. And it had good melody. All the kind of things I look for. If it's something that I think I'll be singing along with eventually, then usually I can get behind it. And I'll have to check out more of them for sure.
You could sing along to this?
The Tiger Shop?
Yeah.
Eventually. Yeah, sure.
This really seems like a Greg thing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Why are you so in disbelief, John?
Well, I mean, it's like saying, oh man, I could really sing along to My Bloody Valentine. How do you sing along to My Bloody Valentine?
It is hard to learn the lyrics for them, for sure. But I don't know. You pick up tidbits along the way. It just takes a lot longer to learn the words. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, as long as it has melody. I mean, it's weird the way I think about things, but if it's some yelling, sure. If there's some parts where it's very dissonant and it's weird, fine. But there's got to be at some point something that I could sing along with, even if it's weird, something that catches me. That's kind of what I go for these days.
I feel like I've got a lot of respect for Tiger's Jaw, but I missed the boat on them when they came out. They were in town, I feel like, not too long ago. I think they're on hiatus or broken up now, are they not? But maybe I'm totally wrong about that. But anyways, though, they were in town. I remember a lot of people were really super excited about it, and it was clearly like a huge deal that they had arrived, and these are people whose taste I really, really respect, so I just feel like I sort of missed something on it. So, like, I watched this, and I'm like, all right, this is kind of cool. It's kind of sleepy for me. It's losing my attention. I'm looking at something else. And then I feel bad that, like, if I had not missed the boat earlier, I would have been way more into this. But, you know, this is cool. If you like Tiger's Jaw, I'm sure you'll like this a lot.
So if they're broken up, why are they putting out a new album?
I don't know. Someone in the comment section said that, so I just take what people write as true.
I don't know how two people are broken up. I mean, like,
you believe Dogface Taco, who said, "I thought this band broke up last year." Dogface Taco.
Saw them less than a year ago.
All right, let's consider them not broken up, and don't read the Punk News comment section.
To the news desk.
Yeah, I wasn't really nuts about this. It's just a little too sedate for me, you know. I mean, I guess I can understand how people like kind of like the indie rock sweet vocal kind of thing. It just wasn't
not
my thing.
Brutal enough.
It wasn't. Well, it wasn't brutal enough, or it wasn't heavy enough, or it wasn't extreme enough. You know, it was just. I mean, I'm getting nailed for writing about rudimentary penile, and people are like, "Oh, this is the greatest thing ever," and I'm like, I don't know, man. Maybe punk rock outgrew me because I didn't outgrow punk rock. I don't know. Anyway, this one's right up Chris Moran's alley. Joey Cape started a new record label.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's Joey Cape of Lagwagon, for all you
whippersnappers. Yeah.
And
I like how someone mentioned My Records. That takes me back. My Records is in his old label.
Actually, I didn't even know anything about that, so you guys can talk about that. But on his record label, it's kind of a cool idea. He has people stay at his house for 7 days, and they record 10 songs, and afterwards they put it up digitally for free. For $5. And that's the idea. It's kind of a, I guess, lo-fi, bang them out, write them quick kind of record. I guess because it's more and more, it's cheaper to put out music, but harder to make money on it. Is this how we're going to see most music? Like, really, I guess, I don't want to say low effort, but little
studio hours being logged.
Yeah, like.
No, I don't think that's the future. I think more and more people are finding access to recording means much easier. Like, they're not having to travel, you know. It's more of a luxury now when you want to go to, like, Atlas Studios in Chicago, or you want to, you know, you want to go up to DC to see Brian McTernan. I mean, that's a luxury. Now, it's not that hard to record a decent record. So I don't think it's going to come to this, but I think this is definitely a nod to the way things used to be for a lot of, you know, bands in the punk and punk-esque drama or genre, sorry, where you know, they have to do things like this. But it's more of a, I think it's more of a nostalgic nod, but I totally dig it. I think it's a great idea, and I completely agree with him about the fact that, you know, when there's too much time on a band's hand in a recording scenario, that they tend to overproduce, overthink things, and it's the more raw aspect of it is fun, but it's not the future.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the idea is really cool. But I'm hoping it's kind of novel. I mean I think it's a cool idea. I don't mean novel as a slight, but I mean hopefully it's successful for him, because I really was bummed out when my records went under. But I was a big Nerf Herder fan, and that's how I first that was my first purchase off of my records. But yeah, anyway, I love Joey Cape, so I will support anything he does, really.
I'm sort of indifferent to Joey Cape, but I think this idea is amazing to me. I love hearing artists in this sort of scenario and the stuff that they turn out there. Who's the band? Yeah. Attack in Black around here. After they released their big, commercially successful album Marriage, they turned around and like a few weeks after that came out, released a record called Curve of the Earth, which they recorded basically sitting on someone's porch with a 4-track recorder, and they just kind of just like banged out a bunch of songs and recorded it and put it out. And it's, you know, yeah, it's lo-fi and everything, but it's so much more interesting. There's so much more depth to it than the thing that had been, you know, through the producer 900 times before it actually got out. So I know I like hearing, you know, these punk guys with the restraints on them where they have to record in that mode where they don't have to necessarily, you know, bring in the big names and crank out huge sound and stuff like that. Like, I think if there's any genre where we can, you know, we can do stuff quickly and have it sound shitty and for that to be totally cool would be, you know, in the punk genre. So I'm good with that. Like, you know, these guys don't need to keep writing records that sound like they're like Foo Fighters recordings.
You guys think like all of them will be acoustic? Because I think the ones released so far were just acoustic acoustic solo records.
I hope not.
Yeah, me too.
Because I think that's kind of cheap. I mean, I love, you know, guys strumming an acoustic guitar, whatever. I have nothing against acoustic guitars, but I really get annoyed by bands that just throw some. They're like, oh, look, I did this acoustic cover of some song you're gonna like. I mean, that's just like. It's just begging for hits or whatever. It's like, hey, look, we haven't put out a new album in a while. Let me throw down an acoustic cover of a popular song for no reason. I mean, it's just like they've kind of phoned it in kind of thing that who's that one? I'm blanking. Who's that one acoustic dude that played on the Olympics and stuff and everyone loves him around here?
Frank Turner.
Like, he kept putting out all these covers. And I'm like, yeah, I could learn the chords to that song too and just – I mean, just because he's got a name, he can just whip these things out so quick, and I think
Greg,
they're pretty
jealous?
Lame.
Are you jealous? Are you jealous of Frank Turner, Greg?
No, I just think he's phoning it in on those covers. I like a good cover, but those are phoned in covers. So anyway, as it relates to this, I hope they throw down quick drums and stuff like that. I mean, if he knows what he's doing in the studio, you can set up, you know, a good drum sound in an hour or two. And then just knock it out. I mean, record it live or whatever. I mean,
you know,
as long as you got, yep.
You know who would be awesome for this along those lines? You know, live drums or whatever, guitar, quick in the studio. Mikey Erg's long-awaited solo album. That'd be badass, wouldn't it?
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Well, speaking of which, I'm moving on. Members of Green Day and
Could I jump in real quick about Tiger's Jaw?
Yeah.
I went to the news desk. Yeah, okay. So... apparently, March 21st, 2013, Tiger Shaw made an announcement on their Tumblr. Quote, after our show in Scranton 2 weeks ago, Adam, Pat, and Dennis let Ben and I know that for personal reasons they are unable to do Tiger Shaw anymore. This was a surprise for the both of us, but everyone is on good terms, and we respect and support them and their decisions. A full band Tiger Jaw lineup. We'll be doing a full U.S. tour in May. something something, but these will likely be the last Tiger Jaw tours for the foreseeable future. But if you read that carefully, it says that basically their backing band of sorts let these two, let the main two know that they weren't going to be their backing band anymore. But so the label, yeah, in August, Run for Cover Records posted that the band never officially stated that they were going to break up, which is true. They just said we're not going to tour as a full band anymore. So the band will still be making music. They're continuing as a two-piece, basically. So, yeah, what they were saying is, you know, we have no – our backing band quit, but we're still a band. So, and they're touring a shitload starting in June, yeah, June 16th all the way through the end – yeah, pretty much all of June and July.
Well, there you have it. And speaking of bands that are formed of backing members – members of Green Day, Jawbreaker, and I think was it a Crimshire? Have four, was it Crimshire or no Pinhead Gunpowder? I forget which what it was.
Probably Pinhead Gunpowder, yeah. If it's Green Day. Yeah.
So Jason White, who's a Green Day member, is in the band along with Adam Faller of Jawbreaker, and oh that's right, and Jason White was also in Pinhead Gunpowder. He's the vocalist and also bassist. Dustin Clark have started a new band called California, which is impossible to Google. So good luck on that.
Yeah,
they've got some a few tour dates coming up, including one with the Avengers and Kicker, which is awesome, and another with the Chuck Dukowski Sextet. Do you guys think this is like a lasting thing? What do you guys think it's going to sound like? Because nobody really knows what this is going to sound like.
I don't know, but it is a horrible band name, I'll tell you.
It's, like I tried to find, it's really, really, really hard to find online.
Yeah, you can't even like stick band on the end of your Google search. Like for a lot of bands, you could put California band. No, that's not going to work either.
Yeah, it did. That's exactly what I did.
California punk band. No, that won't work.
I guess if you want to be like one of those bands that like can shoot, like just like can choose all technology and doesn't want to, you know, interact with the internet at all, right, defiantly. You know, like I don't know, like if you're like Tragedy or something like that, then like you could like take on a name like California, and sure enough, no one will ever find you.
I'm going to start a band called The.
Yeah.
Well, there was already The.
I know, but that's too easy.
Okay.
The. Your band is just The.
The.
I'm going to make a band of.
How about The? That's the hip thing these days, to have T-H-E-E.
But see, we're trying to stay away from hip. God
okay,
damn
okay, right. Okay.
No, I'm going to be The, but because Chris is already in a band called The, I'm just going to be T-H and remove the vowel.
Yeah.
Then you're just going to get errors in your search, and you're never going to find anything.
Although, so California's Facebook page URL is facebook.com/bandcalledcalifornia. So, I can imagine, like, 5 minutes after deciding that was the name, they're going to be like, guys, this might have been a dumb idea.
Yeah. Now, John, here, legal question. Can a state copyright their name as far as where a band or whatever can't use it for profit?
Good question. First of all, you can't copyright a name. You can trademark a name. You can't copyright
Thank
a
you,
name.
Trademark. Okay.
A state that's an excellent question. The answer is a state may trademark its name for certain things, but not for like being a band or whatever. So the answer is no.
So that's basically they can trademark it so another state couldn't pop up and call themselves the same thing.
Yeah, I guess like Virginia could be like, from now on, we're just going to call ourselves California.
Yeah, we're Indiana, and everyone ignores Indiana, so now we're California. That'd be great. And then we change all the city names to California cities.
Adam White,
Indianapolis becomes Los Angeles.
Adam White, how you doing over there? You look quiet on this podcast. Are you sleepy today? Or
he's messing with the fire alarm stuff.
You know what I was doing is I was searching for where I can buy one of those Descendants bonus cups. That is seriously what I was doing. There we go. What are they? $7.99. Hey. Anyways, this band, what? Okay, who's in it? Guy from Green Day, but
Glenn,
not really.
Glenn Danzig, Courtney Love, Glenn Danzig, Stevie Wonder.
I don't know. I have no idea. This band did not elicit any emotion in me at all when it was announced, and it continues to not elicit any emotion in me right now as I look up coffee mugs on Google while we talk about it.
Speaking of, Speaking of bands that are eliciting emotions and people, the Muffs, they're back after 10 years, and after poor Kim Shattuck was kicked out of the Pixies for having too much fun. The new album is going to be called Whoop-Dee-Doo. It's going to be out July 29, 2014, and they've released one track called Up and Down Around, and I dug it, man. I thought this was a pretty kicking track. I was down.
This band, every time I hear this band's name, it just makes me think of that movie Clueless.
They were on the soundtrack, right?
Yeah, they had like the song on the soundtrack.
Right.
Well, them and the Boss Tones.
Right. Yeah. Pretty good soundtrack. Yeah, that's like. I like. Yeah, I like the Muffs. Can't say I'm a super fan. I've been though. They've been one of those bands where I'm like, I should really go back and listen to more of them. So I'll probably be digging into that. Yeah, the new song I didn't get a chance to listen to because I don't remember John telling me that we were going to talk about this.
It's right there in the outline, Greg.
It is?
There in the outline. Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Don't tell people we have an outline.
It is there. I'm sorry.
Adam, where do you stand on the Muffs? I bet you're down with the Muffs.
I am. I'm a fan. They're from a I'm not going there. They're from an era in, I don't know, in punk rock that I'm very fond of. So, you know what, when we sort of started talking with them getting back together, I kind of went back and pulled up a lot of their old stuff, and I was really digging it, and I like this, so this is going to be cool. I'm excited.
Did you listen to Kids of America?
I don't know if I did. Was that the name of the song?
Yeah, that's the one that was in the Clueless movie or soundtrack or whatever.
Kids in America.
Or Kids in America, one of the two. I don't fucking know.
Well, Kids in America.
Let's play a track off the Clueless soundtrack. We can either play something by the Smoking Popes, which we can do.
Yes.
Because Mike Park will give us the right Boston's, to do it.
No, Boston's.
We don't have the right to do that. Or we can do the Beastie Boys, but they probably won't sue us. What do you guys want to do?
Boston's. Popes, Chicago Pride.
All right, let's do Smoking Popes. This is the Smoking Popes. This is a track by the Smoking Popes. I don't know if this particular song is in the Clueless soundtrack, but the Smoking Popes were on the Clueless soundtrack. This is the Smoking Popes.
There she stands, just like someone that you see on a movie screen, like a picture from the page of a magazine, and I have never seen a more beautiful beauty queen. And she stands like something that was made a long time ago, like a statue by that guy Michelangelo. And she don't even know how much I really love her. So I wanna tell her, but I'm way too scared, and my feeble heart is not prepared for the damage if this love's not shared by her. We're not going out, I only wish we were.
of a Popes podcast. We just played some smoking popes. I hope you guys smoked with some popes on a rope while you guys were down with that. Let's talk Pogo Pope. If you get that, you get 5 punks points. Let's close out today's podcast with 3 more short stories. Peter Murphy, he released a new track today off his upcoming album, Lion, due out on June 3rd, I believe. The track is called, off his new album, Lion, the track is called, it's got a good title, the track is called Hang Up. And I got to say, man, I'm a huge Bauhaus fan, Not a huge Peter Murphy solo fan because I think he's a great singer, but his solo material is weak. But this new track, I think it's his best solo track he's ever released. I really like this. It sounded very Bauhaus-ish to me.
Hmm. Oh, this was the infamous story that was we were told we were going to talk about before the actual article went up. Ah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I have nothing to say.
Well, you heard it here, kids. Everyone on the Punk News podcast loves the new Peter Murphy album. They think Peter Murphy's the great. Bauhaus is Punk News' new collective favorite band. Moving on. Rats in the Wall.
Rats off to you.
The band featuring Brad Logan of F-Minus and Leftover Crack have announced their debut full-length. It follows the demo tape they put out last year. The album is called Dead End. It's got 14 tracks, and it's a combination of hardcore, crust, and even, like, hard classic rock. Are you guys excited for this? I know I am. I've got the demo tape. The demo tape is really, really good. It's, you know, it's hard, it's rough, nasty, but it's sort of inventive too. I dug it.
I like Brad Logan. I like Def Minus. I will definitely check this out based on that, but I don't recall ever hearing them.
Yeah, just go listen to Wake Up Screaming, and that's all you need to hear.
Well, actually, it's not as brutal, B-R-0-0-T-A-L, as F-minus. It's actually more indebted to, like, Black Sabbath and earlier crust punk. So.
Yay.
So.
Huh. All right. I like the cover art. The cover art's cool.
That's actually, like, a theme. The cover art is, like, a guy with, like, nails in his head. But they also have a t-shirt with a different guy with nails in his head. I don't know where they're finding all these x-rays with people with nails in their heads.
Photoshop can pretty easily.
they're all pictures of Staza.
Just the guys from Jackass for some reason.
Well, all right then. Let's wrap up the podcast. This was a real quick third section. Maybe I should have taken a break. Kyle Profeta of Comeback Kid has quit the band. Why did he quit the band, you ask? Well, he's going to run a food truck in South Africa. I don't think a lot of people saw this one coming. here's his statement. He says, "It is finally time to say that our original." Oh no, this is the band statement. No one cares about that. Here's what he says to all of you who may not have heard. It saddens me to say I have officially left Comeback Kid. I want to thank Jeremy Heber and Andrew Newfield for their support. And well, I don't really care about his sappiness. Here's what he says. It is now time for me to open a new chapter of my life. I have decided to take my culinary skills down to South Africa. I plan to brand my product down there and open up some food trucks.
Why is his dream funny to you? It's his dream. Because, you're laughing at his dream.
I think running a food truck, you do make pretty good money, to tell you the truth, especially now, but I think that's going to crash out. But South Africa, like, why would you fly to South Africa to start a company if you want to do food trucks?
People got to eat in South Africa.
Yeah, maybe he's got family there. Maybe he's got friends. Maybe he's got an investor there. There's a lot of money in South Africa. I mean, you forget the whole apartheid thing.
Maybe he really liked the Graceland records. So I don't know.
That's racist, Greg.
What?
Have any of you guys listened to the new Comeback Kid record?
No, I haven't yet. No.
I need to hear it. I finally have gotten into Symptoms and Cures after God knows how long. At first, I thought it was just so weird, but I really fucking like it. So now I need to hear the new record.
There are a lot of people that I've heard that have said very positive things about it. So take that for what it's worth.
So you guys don't think it's odd at all that the guy just said, you know, I've been in a band for like 15, 12 years. I'm going to go start a food truck in South Africa.
There's been a lot weirder shit that's happened with people leaving bands.
He didn't hire a hitman or anything.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't hire a hitman. That's true.
He's made a shitload of money in Comeback Kid. He obviously likes cooking or whatever. Maybe he's from South Africa.
Huh. I used to play rugby with a kid from South Africa. We called him Pip because he was like.
Was it Matt Damon?
Was Matt Damon from South Africa?
No, that movie.
Where's that coming from?
That movie he's in, the one he's the apartheid rugby game or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, he was really good at rugby and kind of cocky.
Was it Jason Bourne?
So why'd you call him Pip?
I called him Pip because that was when South Park was popular. And so he had like his – like you know how South African accent is kind of like – it's sort of like an English accent. So
right.
But I think Pip was Dutch. Or no, Pip was English. I forget. But so they called him Pip. But he was like really good at rugby. But he was like really short. He was like 4'11".
Hey, maybe if we're lucky, this guy will give us some news stories in the future about how he hires assassins to kill all of his competition in South Africa.
I hope he gives us updates of his taco truck adventures.
Yeah.
Taco truck.
I'm assuming it's a taco truck.
No, I bet it's some kind of meat on a stick. Actually, no, Comeback Kid, most of them are like vegans or whatever, so it's probably some kind of fucking...
There's vegan tacos. They got
Someone, shut up. Don't even so, no.
Like
there is
the
not a
comment,
vegan taco.
The third comment it, down...
You can look. You can call it some kind of fucking shit on a Tostita or whatever, but it's not a taco.
That's gonna sell. Yeah, we sell shit on a Tostita. Come get some shit on a Tostita.
Here, eat this. Put this in your face. The third comment down says hyenas wouldn't go for tofu dogs, bruh.
Yeah, tofu. Yeah.
Man.
When I first read the headline for this article, I didn't see South Africa. I just saw Africa. For some reason, I imagined him like driving through the Sahara, fucking selling something out of a truck.
That's racist.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I mean, we've had what's his name from Warren from Against Me quit to do the food thing. He did it in Florida.
Where he's from, not in South Africa.
The Shins drummer. And they're all drummers. The Shins drummer got kicked out of the band by what's-his-face, and then he started a food – I think it was a food cart, not even a truck. He has to push it around.
Rotator cuff, dude. I'm telling you that when it goes, it's time to get out of the business.
Adam, why you're being particularly silent on this podcast?
It's the smoke detector, damn it.
Yeah, I know. That was before the show. No one knows what we're talking about. I'm entirely okay with this guy going to South Africa. For all you know, he's from South Africa. And
that's what I said.
If that's the case, then there is nothing weird about this at all. Yeah. Eventually, you cannot beat Comeback Kid's drummer.
I question his motives. I think there's something going on here that we don't know about.
Plus, hold on. The other thing, too. Hyenas? Like, what... Africa is an enormous place. There's lots of things that go on there that probably don't involve like stereotypical jungle animals.
You know what they have in South Africa? In South Africa, they have those fucking penguins that like come up and they like go into people's houses and shit.
What?
Seriously?
Like home invasion penguins?
Yes. I watched a special about it on National Geographic.
Wow.
I saw people like literally like swatting them with brooms to get them out of their houses.
That sounds fun, man. I mean, I would love to have like invader penguins.
They're just fucking waddling all around Cape Town.
Penguins
awesome.
Are great, except for they're kind of stinky.
Are they?
These aren't the big, mean, like emperor penguins. These are just like little, like, they're called, I think, like Cape penguins or something like that.
Man, penguins rule. They're like the best bird.
Flightless bird.
I like the macaroni ones, whatever they're really called. The macaroni penguins with the yellow stuff.
Macaroni penguins?
What?
Yeah, that's the nickname. I'll look up the real thing, but they've got these yellow like little tufts by like kind of like their eyebrows.
You mean puffins?
Crazy. No.
Puffin is not a penguin.
I know, but that's got a yellow tuft.
No.
I'm gonna speak up and defend puffins on this show.
All right, let's wrap up today's podcast.
There is a Wikipedia entry for macaroni penguin.
I'll look it up.
They look cool.
Greg.
They have crazy, crazy yellow eyebrows.
Oh, this got off the rails.
Yep.
Wow.
John, you better close this sucker out.
Let's wrap up the podcast. Adam White, number two, are you going to any hot shows lately? Or in the alternative, have you got any sweet, sweet records lately?
No, I've been just like living in one of these horrible work holes through which no light can escape. So one day I will do things that are fun.
Chris Moran, number three.
Yeah, I actually, 3 weeks ago, I went to Death to False Hope Fest, I hadn't really been to a show in a while, and I caught a really good band I like. I think we may have covered them once or twice. Anyways, they're called Game Day Regulars. I really dug them. So check them out. They're pretty rad.
Greg DeSimp, number four.
I'm just going to say, you know, whatever the opposite of a plug is, whatever John Gentile here is coming out with, you know, whatever. Don't read that. Only do Two Gregs, One Podcast, or Gregor-related reviews. Even though I only put on like one thing a month, you should read that and not whatever John is doing.
Well, thanks for the plugs, Greg. You know, I was going to go to an awesome band last Friday, but I saw this banging food truck down the street. So I decided to go to the food truck instead.
Tofu Dogs.
But actually, you know, I saw Off last weekend. Listen, people, if you get the chance, you have got to see Off. The concert was so awesome. I closed my eyes and just listened. It was so great.
Nerd!
Go Game see hippie. Off if you can. Let's wrap up this podcast. Right after this, stay tuned on the podcast, because after this will be an interview with Holtz Foyer of Arno Corps, the greatest band of all time, the self-proclaimed greatest band of all time. They're, like I said, they sing about Austrian folklore, which has a lot of overlap with Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, so you definitely want to check it out. This is a track by them called Predator.
This is Holtz for you.
Oh, hi, Holtz for. This is John Gentile from Punk News. How you doing?
Hey, I am fantastic, John. How the hell are you?
I'm doing great. You know, thanks so much for the interview. It's a real honor for me to get to interview you guys, because you guys are Austrian legends. So that, I mean, it's great joy for us to speak to you. So,
absolutely. I would clarify and say we're Austro-Californian legends right there. Come on. We're international studs going on right here.
That's true. You guys are actually about to head over to the UK and Ireland, I believe, in a couple of months.
That's right, of course, and that is a big part of our international presence that we always have to maintain. You know, we got to get out there, spread the pump, right? That is what Honor Corps is all about, and what we always have to pursue for the people.
You know, in America, we love Austrian people. In America, when Austrian people come and become actors, they become huge. You know, you guys are huge internationally because, you know, you're from Austria, you're Austro-Californian. My question is, do the people in the UK and Ireland react differently to you guys because of your Austrian and because of your Californian background?
Well, exactly. I think it is. It's really a combination of things right there. Like so much in life, right? It's always many variables involved. And one thing that I like to do is point out, because all the time most people are putting maybe a little bit of emphasis on being from Austria, where I'm more talking about the Alpine region. And this is really where the ancient heroic lore originated right there. So that's important for me to clarify because, you know, as far as the flatland regions of Austria, I'm barely even familiar. It's more the culture of the Alpine regions, the Balzi Alps. So what we do, we all the time people say, oh, in Arno Corps they have the Austrian accent. That's wrong because this is a Balzi accent. It's a Balzi accent. And by what I mean by that is this is an accent that anybody can choose to adopt. Just like in the morning, you could choose to put on your sneakers or put on boots, whatever you want. You could also choose that the way you are going to communicate with the world. So you could choose, God damn it, I'm going to talk Balzi. I'm going to have a Balzi accent. And I'm going to, you know, really command an audience right there. When I'm speaking, people are going to listen, and it's fantastic. So that's part of it. And of course, here in California, I've been here 14 years. So I've maybe adopted a little bit of the California way of speaking here. And, you know, one time, you know, sometimes I'll slip into, instead of just saying something that's fantastic or ballsy, I might once in a while slip up and say it's radical too, right? Come on! Good damn it, it's multicultural.
So what you're saying is, I guess, the Alpine way of life and also the ballsy way of life, it's more of a state of mind than it is a genetic background.
Exactly. And that's really important to what we do. And I think that is important for people to realize. Because all the time, the primary message of Arno Corps is empowerment, right? We're motivation. We're inspiration. And what we want people to do is be enlightened to their own goddamn potential to be a goddamn hero and shiro right there. That's what it's all about. And if they had any type of hindrance to that based on where they were born, come on, don't bullshit me right there. It doesn't matter.
You know, Holzfuhrer, you've got a re-release coming out. You had a new album come out last year, a new EP come out last year. You've got an app coming out, and we're going to talk about that. But before we get to that, we have to clarify one thing for the audience, and that's right. That you guys aren't specifically Arnold Schwarzenegger fans. It's that because you and Arnold Schwarzenegger come from the same region, you share similar characteristics. Is that correct?
Well, exactly. What has happened here, one of the big goals of Arno Corps has been to expose the wrongdoing that is going on. Because Arno Corps, we find all of our inspiration from ancient Austrian Alpine lore, mythology, heroic archetypes, the symbolism that we have, the lyrical metaphor involved. And what we expose is Austroploitation. And this is cinematic Austroploitation that you always see in these blockbusters. And one thing in common with all of these films is that you see Arnold Schwarzenstrudel involved every single time. For a while, I thought this was coincidence. I thought maybe he was a victim here and they were exploiting him. Turns out he was selling out his own people's culture. He wasn't even from the Alps, though. He would just go up there to do skiing. He would go skiing up in the Alps, and he would listen in, and he would hear the tales that were being told around the campfires, and he would get pumped up himself and get inspired. but I'm not sure he had the right amount of respect for those tales. So that is what Arnicore is all about, restoring integrity to these heroic tales of triumph and tragedy and the muscles and the glutes and the arms and the biceps and triceps, action adventure lifestyle, whole thing, heroic symmetry. I hope that makes, does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and actually I'm glad you could phrase it that way because it lays it very clearly out for the audience. But actually, you're re-releasing your album, The Greatest Band of All Time, and I believe most of those songs are based on ancient Alpine lore, correct?
Absolutely. And on that particular record, in fact, every single song on there is based on an ancient tale. So that's right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I apologize. I don't want to get the Arno Corpse mad at me because I've got utmost respect for you guys.
Hey, come on. We're a rescue team, not assassins here. Don't worry.
Well, very good. Now, I know one of the songs on it is called Predator. What's the best way to fight a predator in case I ever get attacked by a predator?
Whoa! Well, let me tell you. In life, every time we wake up, we are being assaulted, right? We are being assaulted, whether we know it or not, with all kinds of things from society that are endeavoring to make you soft like a marshmallow. So all we're looking at here is metaphorical pursuit of ballsiness, and we're also looking at the symbolism of what a predator is. And that is a different thing for each person. So Arnicore isn't like other bands out there that are maybe, they're writing songs about fantasy and all that. What we do with these ancient tales, we look at the underlying meaning. You know, there is more truth found in myth and mythology that is passed down for generations than you will find in mere factual information. You know what I mean? That is the truth that you could apply to your own life to enhance your pursuit ballsiness and the action adventure lifestyle right there. So in your case, I would have to sit down with you. What are the predators in your life right there? What are the things that you, that are creating obstacles for you? But we talk about all the surrounding variables if you're in that kind of battle in the song. For example, when you have a friend that you trusted, you know, you trusted your life in their hands and all that. And then you discover that you've been betrayed. You've been dropped in the meat grinder, you and your whole rescue team. And then you realize this guy's been pushing too many pantles. And you have to say to him, you son of a bitch, what's the matter? And, of course, you have to say, what happened to you? You used to be someone that could trust. So that's what's going on in Predator. So much layers. Come on. So many layers.
Do you ever get frustrated that people only look at these great Alpine legends at their face value and don't really investigate the true meaning underneath and how it can better one's own life?
Of course. I mean, that is very frustrating. But, you know, frustration is also motivation. So, what, you know, if I become content and the world is perfect, I'm going to get lazy. I'm going to get complacent. My ass is going to get soft. So what I do is a reminder. If you have an object in front of you and it is illuminated, if you put on some half illuminated, right? One side is dark, one side is lit up. And if you're wearing sunglasses, the only side that you can see is the side with light on it, right? So this is a reminder for me. That's why I always wear my sunglasses on stage, because it's a reminder. Always look at the bright side right there. Looking at the bright side. That's what I'm doing here.
You know, you've got a song on The Greatest Band of All Time called Crom, which is the story's been passed down for 100 years in America through Robert E. Howard with Conan, with some movie remakes and later on. What I like about Crom, at least in the Robert E. Howard mythology, is that he's a god that doesn't really care about the people that he watches over, opposed to the Judeo-Christian god, which hypothetically looks out for his chosen people. My question is, what does Crom mean to you, because you're from the Alpine region?
Oh, of course. Come on, let me talk about Crom strong on this mountain. That is particular to anybody from the Alps and is familiar with the stories. And there's a reason we live up there. That is to be closer to Crom, despite the fact that he does not listen. But once in a while, what is important, even when you seldom pray, you can say to him, come, grant me one request. Grant me revenge! And that should only be, you know, a last resort. You know, the last resort when you really need revenge, you need to bring some justice to a situation. So that is what that's all about. John, I am impressed with you. I just need to tell you right now, I am impressed with your knowledge. You did your research.
Well, thank you. I had to, because you guys are international legends. I mean, you guys might be the biggest band of all time. I don't know if anybody's bigger than you guys. So I had to.
If you did a strict measurement of muscularity, we might be in that classification. You know, it's true.
What's also interesting is the new album is, well, I mean, the greatest band of all time is being re-released on Jello Biafra's Alternative Tentacles. And Jello Biafra actually once took one of his songs and sort of modified it towards Alpine Legends. He did a newer version of California Uber Alles.
Exactly. Hey, can I tell you a little story right now?
Sure.
I'm going to tell you something. I have to admit something to you. When it comes to Alternative Tentacles, Jello Biafra, and all that, when he came to us, it became very clear to us right away, Arnold Core and Jello, we have very different goals. Our goals are different, but I think that's all right. I think we could work it out, because on one hand, you have Arnold Core, where our primary concern, of course, integrity of the Alpine Tales, bringing it back, restoring integrity, pumping people up, making people see their potential, and all that. All this fantastic, motivational, goddamn material that we need to bring to the people. On the other hand, you look at Jello, and he found out, hey, this Arnold Core, he's exposing Arnold Schwarzenegger. And that is what appealed to him, because, of course, he has political motivation that he always has, right? Jello Biafra, politics. So he's a little bit politically motivated, and that, you know, it's more for him. He wants to take down Arnold right there. And like you mentioned, of course, he has rewritten the song to apply to him. And now you get Jerry Brown back in office, and guess what? He didn't change the lyrics back. He still leaves it to Arnold. But hey, can I keep something between you, me, and your readers and listeners right now?
Just between us and the listeners, absolutely.
Right. I'm thinking tight circle. I mean, you, me, your listeners, readers, and also the people that are on the internet. That's all. Anything outside of that, I don't want to hear of this story I'm about to tell you, my theory.
Okay.
And we have a gentleman's agreement?
Gentlemen, absolutely.
All right, perfect. So I have a theory right now. Can I believe it? This is unbelievable. But I believe that Jello Biafra, in his heart, has a goddamn man crush on Arnold Schwarzenegger right there. This guy has an unhealthy obsession. You know what it's reminding me of? It's reminding, you know, those preachers, those wacky preachers, and they're always telling everybody how the gay people are going to go to hell and all that, and then suddenly they're found with a male prostitute.
Right,
and
right.
They're exposed. Well, I'm thinking it's kind of the same thing going on. Hey, I hope I'm wrong right here, but I think there's a chance someday Jello Biafra, we're going to find him. He's going to be exposed. We're going to find out that he is shaving his body, greasing it down, pumping up his muscles, smoking stogies, flexing in the mirror, working on his ballsy accent, of course. And all that we can hope, as far as our, you know, in Arnold Core and you, of course, we get to hope that he doesn't go down the downward spiral and start doing steroids or anything like that. But if he does, who are we to judge, right? Forget about it!
You know, I agree with you, because if you notice, Jello has become much more fit in the past 5 or so years. He's getting more, and he's still continuing along that projection. He's getting fitter.
Absolutely. I mean, when we first met, the first thing we started talking about was muscles. He told me that he had to work more on his arms, but he always felt really good about his pectorals. Can you believe that?
With Jello, I believe it. Holzfuhrer, I've got
it's
a few...
It's unbelievable, but I believe it.
I've got a few questions left for you. You guys have an app coming out. Speaking of working out, I think it's a push-up app. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Absolutely. This app is already out. It is out on the market. It is in the App Store. Right now, it's only on the iOS platform. So if you have the iPad, iPhone, iPod, you could install the Wheel of Pain Push-Ups app. What you could do is put this app on your phone. It is a push-up app that will get you in condition using a few variables in there. You, of course, have AutoCore music included with this app. And it's a whole training regimen, and it's scientifically based. We get people to be able to execute 102 consecutive push-ups over a period of time. And this is all about the repetition and the recovery and getting back to it, working hard. You know, it is like the making of the sword. The more resistance that you give it, the more obstacles it can overcome. So we have that going on. It's like pushing the wheel of pain, running around, you get stronger. But on that, it senses when you do your push-ups, it counts them, right? You hear 1, 2, 3, 4. But amongst the countings, if you're doing fast, it's going to compliment you. It's going to go, look at those pectorals, unbelievable deltoid. Hey, you're a stud, right? It's going to tell you these things. But if you slow down, it's going to tell you the opposite. It's going to say, come on, don't be a get them choir boy. And this is what's fantastic. You get the verbal feedback on top of the music, on top of the counting. And while this app kicks your ass, it also will take your name. You can put your name in the leaderboard, and we have a bunch of people participating from 50 different countries on the leaderboard right now. And I'm not a big fan of competition. I'll tell you right now, the day of the contest, it's not hard for me to give the wrong advices. But when it's not the day of the contest, I'm always giving the right advices, of course. So what we have there is people on there, but I don't want them to compare themselves with what other people are doing. I want people on the Wheel of Pain to compare themselves right now with who they were yesterday, right? That's what we're talking about. This is where you find progress.
Well, very good. I think that's a great positive message. And a last question, Holzfuhrer, is there are other bands out there that came after Arno Corpse that seem to be inspired by, you know, the Alpine region or Arnold Schwarzenegger. What would you say to those bands if you met them? Are they doing justice to the great tradition, or are they mocking it, or are they, you know, abusing it?
Hey, well, before I continue, I'm going to correct you, if you don't mind, on two things right there.
Sure.
Because sometimes people misconstrue and they get the wrong meanings. My name is pronounced Holzfuhrer.
Holzfuhrer.
Which is different than Foyer, that's right. Which has a different meaning than Führer. Because I am not the... People think that I am like the father or something. That's not true. Even though sometimes I could be a mentor. But it's Holzfuhrer. And Arno Corps, the PS is silent right there. So it's Arno Corps, much like the Marine Corps or the Peace Corps. So you have Arno Corps here. So I hope you could accept that ballsy criticism. It's not even criticism. It's giving you some goddamn ballsy advices right there.
Well, I appreciate it. It's a way to improve myself and improve my understanding of other cultures, right, which I appreciate.
Hey, where you're concerned, you just need to worry about getting more perfect, which is hard to do because you're perfect already, right?
Well, come on!
That's the attitude that we want you to embrace. So back to you, you had a bullshit question right there. Because this, we find ourselves, of course, Arno Corps, or anybody that is a pioneer. Of course, when I first moved here in 2000, the former band, we first show was at 924 Gilman Street in February 2001. So we got started a long time ago, and we've been through trials, tribulations. And over the time, we've had many opportunity for bigger exposure. But all the time, people are wanting to control you, and they wanting to spin things a certain way. So we always found it beneficial. Let's stay underground. Let's allow this to be something that is discovered by people. And this will support, of course, a stronger bond, because Arno Corps has the strongest bond with her fan base in the world. And it's because those fans know that when they discovered Arno Corps, they became goddamn heroes, or sheroes, right? And that is a connection that is lifelong. So, come on. But what we did, we invented a genre of sorts, right? That's what we came out of the gate saying, we invented our own genre. And I am the first to admit a mistake. because it was a mistake to say it was a genre. It's not. It's only a genre if other bands are doing it, right? So I should have never put it in the you know, framework there. It should have just been, this is hardcore, and this is our action-adventure hardcore rock and roll, and nobody else can do it because they don't have the background. They don't have the information. They don't have the right tools. So, of course, over the years, about 7 years after we had been performing up and down the coast and we had finally gone back to Europe and done the tours out there, UK, and all that, we discovered years later that suddenly there are other bands that are attempting to do what they perceived hardcore to be. But this was a misperception. They misunderstood. Anybody else that shares any song titles, any lyrics with hardcore, they have it all twisted around and backwards right there. They are giving homage to the very man that has bastardized the Lorne mythology. And let me tell you, I don't have a vendetta against Arnold or anything, but it is not conducive to my message to put this guy on a pedestal when, in fact, what we are trying to do is put our own audience on a pedestal. They need to realize that they can actually surpass their own hero. They need to realize when they are hearing these action-adventure tales, the tales of war and mythology, the triumph, tragedy, these timeless sagas, they need to realize that the hero character in there, that is not somebody else. That is themselves. It is symbolic of their own self, and it is symbolic of what they could do every day so they could apply that to themselves. But if they get caught up with thinking this hero character in there, this is permanently tied to somebody else, if this is tied to an actor or a bodybuilder or a politician, what is that going to do for you? That is always going to have a glass ceiling that you can never reach. So we tear it down. Exactly. So that is the wrongdoing of any other band that attempts to do what we're doing. And frankly, one of the bands that did this, I didn't have a whole lot of problem because each band member wrote to us. They told us, hardcore, we know you're the originators. You're fantastic. They had a guitarist from Korn involved in the band, and they were really polite about the whole thing. So it made it really hard for me to really want to take them out. But then there's another example where the guy was, I don't want to go on a rant here, but what he did was wrong throughout the whole process. And I told many people, this guy is dangerous, he's a narcissist, there's problems here. But, you know, I maybe had a different perspective, right? But in the long run, thankfully, truth is always revealed. So I don't even need to worry about it. Hardcore doesn't need to worry about these things because, of course, it goes back to missing glasses. Look at the bright side! The bright side of the situation is that, you know, we have gained many new goddamn people on our rescue team. We have so many new fans because they were exposed to maybe a different band that had a higher profile because the members were in bigger bands. And so they were exposed to this. And then they do a little bit of research and they discover, holy shit, right now, can you believe this? Hardcore was doing this nearly a decade before. And then they discover us and they dig in and they realize, holy shit, this isn't a goddamn one-trick pony. This is a goddamn lifestyle with hardcore. I could make this the soundtrack of my life right here. I could integrate this in everything I do. This is going to be the thing that raises me to a championship level right there. This is what's going to make me a goddamn warrior to feel the pump that could take on any challenge. Can you believe that?
Well, I can believe it, Holtz Foyer, and I think it's wonderful. I think the message that you guys are spreading is wonderful, and I'm super thank looking you. Forward to the re-release of the new album. So thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. So if you want to email me, if you have any follow-up, I'm happy to do that or anything that you need. I am considering you now and forever part of a rescue team right now. You're part of it, whether you like it or not.
Well, I'm quite honored, and what else can I say? But that's one of the highest honors I've ever received. So, Holtz Foyer, thank you so much again for your time.